Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary movement around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of singleness of purpose, anonymity, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble states, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And you guys are getting a 3-for-1 deal tonight. It's going to be steps 5, 6, and 7. That's like 25% of all the steps. I mean, wow, what a great night to be here. We're going to do 5, 6, and 7. I'm going to read the first paragraph or two, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each. So please help me welcome Jen and Morgan. Step 5 says, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. We're going to start on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We've put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We'll be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason is first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. Did you decide who was going to go first, Jen?
Oh, okay. All right, that was a twist. All right, hello everybody, I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date, it's November 15th, 2013. This is my home group, and I have a sponsor that knows I'm alive, and that I talk with frequently, and all of that good stuff. So yeah, I didn't just come here for friends, you know. I ended up in AA because I literally had no other option. My drinking got to a point where I felt like there was no way out, and I wanted to die, you know. And what it looked like at the end was me almost dying a lot. After a small chain of events of me trying to, you know, control and manage for the last time, where I thought that if I just locked myself in the bedroom and got through the 5 or 6 days of detox, that everything would be okay and I would be my normal self again, like I was back when I was young, you know, and I would be happy and content with life. But the thing is I'm not equipped with a solution to life, you know, because I got this thing that's constantly telling me that you're thinking about me, that you're judging me while I'm judging you, and I hate myself, and I've got all of these fears, you know, that I don't even really realize I have until I get to this point. So yeah, I have a lot of experience here because you know, after that week I ended up getting arrested and kind of threw up my hands and realized that I kind of suck at doing this on my own, you know, and it was the first time in my life I ever actually asked for help. And I'm from the beach, and I had a lot of court stuff going on there, and out of rehab they suggested that maybe I should, you know, not go straight back to Virginia Beach. So I didn't, and I went up to a recovery house in Richmond and kind of sponsor hopped for a little bit and got the sponsor that I thought was cool, you know, and basically became really good friends and tried to survive on the fellowship of AA for about 2.5 years. And the last 6 months was extremely miserable. So basically what I did was a whole lot of nothing. I started reading through the book with that sponsor, and I think I was the only person that, you know, actually wanted that from him. Kind of wanted that from him. I just saw that's what other people did, so I was like, maybe we should do this. And you know, I was at a point in my life where I still wasn't willing to pray. I wasn't taking that third step whatsoever. And I didn't want. You know, I just kind of thought that if I didn't drink and hung out with you guys, that life would get good. And it kind of did. And I remember I got to this point with him in the book, and I left a whole bunch of stuff out, you know, and I wasn't honest about a lot. And it was real quick. And I kind of just, you know, I felt a little bit better after that because I got some of that small stuff out of the way, but I held on to a lot of stuff. And it wasn't sufficient, you know. So basically what it ended up looking like was I'm trying to control and manage every aspect of my life, and that I'm, you know, I'm seeking relief. You know, whether it be sex, gambling, leaving for a month and going on tour around the country with various bands. Like, this is what I'm trying to do. My default is to do anything but the stuff laid out in here. You know, even though it's super simple and I get the most relief from this, but my brain likes to think that I have a better way. So it did end up getting to the point where it's like, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. After a summer that I had left and basically traveled the country, my dad had some cancer stuff going on, which is all good now, but he was like, I want you to move home. And I hadn't been to a meeting in a couple of months and starting to go crazy in my own mind. And I got to the point after a trip in Colorado where I came back here and I was just like mentally beat up. And I had lived in Norfolk at the time, like officially for about a month. And I didn't really know what to do, but I was like, I've got some money and buying a gun sounds like a great idea because that AA stuff didn't work for me last time. You know, like this is where my mind goes, left to my own devices. And I something came over me. It was like, maybe you should just go to one of those meetings and see if, maybe you can make some friends. You know, you're good at making friends. That's what I thought. You know, that was my plan of action at the time, when really I was dying inside. And I kind of hung out for a little while before asking my current sponsor to sponsor me, because everybody was happy. And I was at a point in my life where I really wanted to die. And I was done, you know, trying to think that I really had no other idea but to just say, screw it, I'm going to do this stuff that people have been telling me to do for the past, almost 3 years at the time. And, you know, maybe it'll give me a little bit of relief. And then, you know, actually 2 years ago to the day was the first time that I actually unloaded a real fifth step, you know, without leaving anything out, you know. And I'm a little nervous up here because, like, this was, honestly, for me at least, this is where I got the most freedom that I've ever felt from anything in my entire life. And you hear people talk about, oh, step four is so hard, writing all this stuff down, you know, like telling it to somebody is, you know, even harder, but it's the most freeing thing that I've ever done. And let me. Yeah, I think that's about it for me for now, because there, I'm going to go more into that in a little bit. So thanks.
I'm Jen. I'm an alcoholic. Probably should apologize to Morgan. He likely has a resentment against me now because I said that I was going to go first, but then I switched it up.
You're fine. You're totally fine.
So I have a home group and I have a sponsor. I got sober October 1st, 2012. And before that, I was in the program of AA. I say in, and what that looked like was 1-2 drink, 1-2-3 drink, and then at the very craziest part of my life, it was I did steps 1-2-3-4 and drink. So this book is pretty spot on. I think the hardest part for me about both fourth and fifth steps is that it's overwhelming. It's not that it's hard work, because it's my story. You know, I know what happened in my life. But with both the fourth step and the fifth step, I get in my head like, oh my gosh, there's so much. How am I going to get it all on paper? It's overwhelming. It really is. Looking at your life, looking at the things, going through kind of chronologically, that's at least how I did it, thinking chronologically through the different places in my life where I put myself or other people in positions to be hurt. And honestly, the first time I did a four step, it took me probably a couple weeks because I didn't do it very fully. I don't think I wasn't very thorough, even though the book specifically says, like, be painstaking and, like, thorough. So I wasn't very thorough about it. And then at the end, I thought, well, I wrote all this stuff down, and now I'm going to have to, like, go through and explain it to someone. And that was just, I mean, I can't really think of another word except for overwhelming to me, because it's kind of like opening up these for lack of a better word, but like wounds or memories that I've had, and it's like pulling off the Band-Aid. And honestly, it wasn't bandaged very well, but you know, in my alcoholic mind, what I do is I take these memories that I don't like and I just push them back. Like, nope, not gonna think about that today. Nope, maybe tomorrow, not today. And this forced me to kind of dredge up those memories. And then once I had written them down, it forced me to talk about them. And I think one of my biggest fears was, first of all, how am I going to... I never really had the fear, honestly, that my sponsor was going to think I was a terrible person. Not because I didn't do terrible things, not because I personally didn't think I was a terrible person. I did. But my fear wasn't her thinking that. My fear was just the enormity, it seemed at the time, of the magnitude of my task, which was to sit and tell her 26 years of... this is my life and the insanity that goes along with it. Because my insanity started well before I drank. And the drinking helped with the insanity until it stopped helping and it started making it worse. And so it wasn't just, you know, Jen started drinking at 13 and then at 26 she got sober. And so for those 13 years, here's what happened. No, it's Jen came out of the womb on June 8th, 1986, and immediately was batshit crazy, excuse my language, and then, you know, from there, we progressed to 26. I mean, that was really, for me, it just seemed, like, so daunting, and it almost seemed tiring. Like, even before I started talking, I felt exhausted, thinking, and here's the thing, here's why. Not because it was going to be really hard or take a long time to sit down with my sponsor and tell her these things, but because in my brain, I'm thinking how I'm going to say it, what words I'm going to use to describe the things in my list. I am scripting my fist up. And I don't know if you've ever, if anyone's like me and you kind of figure out what you're going to say before you say it, you're, you know, very scripted life. You know, I'll have a conversation with you before we've even talked. But it's exhausting, and at the time I didn't know any other way to live. It was just, okay, I'm going to tell her these things today, and here are the words I'm going to use to tell her, and here are the things that I can't forget to mention these, because if I forget, then, oh, I'm going to be drunk, like, I'm going to get drunk. And at that point in time, I was so scared, like, terrified of getting drunk again, that I didn't want to do anything that might put me at risk of that. And I think at one point I told her, I was like, what if I forget something? Like, there's so much stuff that happened. What if I leave something out? She's like, you know, the goal is, you know, that you'll do multiple 4 steps. And also there's like 10, 11, and 12, so you're good. But in my head, it wasn't good enough because I have to like get everything on paper. And honestly, I wound myself up so much that my 4th step took about 6 months. Do not do that. It was miserable. My 5th step was a little quicker just because she was like, all right, we're going to sit down, we're going to do this. And she kind of, I mean, that was that. She let me kind of wallow through my own pain for the 4th step. But the 5th step, we kind of got through. And honestly, after every time I met with her, I felt a little less weighted down. I know that probably sounds trite or, you know, something that you hear frequently, but I can't, there's no other way for me to explain it except for that. I felt something being lifted off of me. And that didn't last forever. You know, I didn't, you know, I haven't, all of a sudden I'm miraculously this weightless person who doesn't have fears and concerns. And I mean, they build back up, but that's why you do the steps more than once, if you know. But that day, for the next, you know, couple of days, I could feel that I had told someone these things. It wasn't just in my head rolling around. You know what I think of it like, and then I'm gonna stop, but it's kind of like when I was a kid, I really wanted a rock tumbler. So my dad got me this rock tumbler, and they'd have these like really, you know, you get these just kind of dirty rocks, and then you'd put it in the tumbler and it'd just be really noisy and clanking around for a long time, and then it'd be shiny. And I felt like, you know, that's what I was trying to do. If I just kept thinking through these things, like if I just could figure out my patterns of behavior in my life and why I did the things that I did, then I would have this like shiny life, this shiny rock at the end. But really all that happened is instead it was kind of like a shoe and a dryer. It was just like clank, 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 like all the time, you know? So for me, my problem is it starts in my head and it pretty much stays in my head when I'm not telling someone about how crazy I am and when I'm thinking that I have to script when I have to script my conversation for my fifth step, things are not good because I'm not doing a fifth step. What I'm doing is some bizarre, you know, preparation for a fifth step, which you've already done that. That's your fourth step. There's no more preparation at that point. So, yeah, that's all for now. Thanks.
Awesome. I love the rock tumbler. Can everybody hear okay? Is anybody having trouble hearing? You good? We're going to continue on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Mama?
Yeah, this is very much me. You know, I at least used to think that I did a very good job at, you know, making, you know, kind of setting things up in a way so everybody would see me a certain way. You know, like it's always been like that. Like growing up, I wasn't necessarily popular, but I wasn't in the loser crowd, but I was kind of friends with everybody. I was the chameleon blending in everywhere that I went, because I wanted everybody to like me, you know, and that's how far back all of this fear stuff goes. And I didn't even realize it, you know. I was like blind to that fact until I came here. You know, I just thought that's how I was, you know, like I'm cool with everybody, it's all good. You know, in reality, I'm mostly trying to manipulate any situation to go my way or, you know, to make you see me as a certain person, you know, whether depending on the day, you know what I mean? Or depending what position I am in. So this is true even with like my drinking with my family and stuff. You know, I wasn't hiding sprees from my fellows. I'm sorry. I was hiding it from the family only. My fellows were, you know, doing the same thing as me. You know, and it would get to the point where I would hang on for a little while or I'd get sent off to go to some treatment center I didn't want to be at. You know, I was a veteran of that. You know, get the family off my back, make it look like I'm doing well, come back, destroy people's lives again. You know, that's basically how it was. And then it got to a point where I just stopped even trying to, you know, hide anything from anybody because it had just gotten, I was too far gone, you know, to the point in I think the last month, 9 months of my drinking, I just disappeared mostly, you know, for the last couple months before I tried that nice home detox, I was couch surfing homeless for a little bit there, and that's kind of what it looks like for me. And the worst part too is I get sober and I don't do anything. All those fears are still there, you know. And I'm trying to put on a front like everything's okay when inside I'm dying. And I'm I'm basically doing all of this stuff, and I'm causing even more damage sober than I was drinking, you know, with the people around me, because now these fellows aren't really drinking either, you know, and I'm lashing out like I was when I was drinking, because I'm insane. So yeah, I think I'm good for right now on that.
So this is one of my favorite parts of the book, because I think it's, I mean, it's just so spot on. The Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde phenomenon. My husband at the time, well, he's still my husband now, but my husband, when at the time I was drinking, he would say, "I don't know what it is with you." This was towards the end of my drinking. But once you start drinking, it's like a light switch. You know, it's like, he said, it's strange to watch. I can't even really articulate it other than it's like someone flips a switch and you're a completely different person. And so this was before I knew anything about the Big Book. He didn't really, you know, he had never read the Big Book. That was just something that he noted one day, and it really stuck with me, because it's like, what does he mean? You know, I'm not, how am I just a completely different person? Of course, I had no knowledge or recollection of that, because I was a blackout drunk. So whatever I did in a blackout drunk, you know, I can't tell you. But I think there were times when he actually recorded me, but then just deleted it because he didn't want to expose me to how insane I became when I was drinking, which was, I still don't know. The jury's out on whether or not that was a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe I should have seen it, but it really is neither here nor there at this point. And I think that the problem for me is that when I can keep my alcoholism and my outside of alcoholism life separate, I'm good. The problem is when I get to the point where I can no longer maintain the dual identity. For a long time, I was very good at, you know, I'm a student, I'm involved in school stuff, you know, that is my one life, but then my home life is just insanity. And as long as I could keep those things divided, I didn't have a problem. I felt like if I maintained the one persona, the one that I wanted other people to see, then I wasn't an alcoholic, right? Because alcoholics are people, you know, they're an alcoholic. Or I was an alcoholic, but I was, my favorite term, a functional alcoholic. So that was kind of what I was always striving for, the functional alcoholic, because that sounds like it's okay, right? Like, you don't need AA if you're a functional alcoholic. I really wish that someone would define that term, because it's very elusive to me. In any event, at some point, though, I couldn't keep those things separated anymore, and my alcoholic life started bleeding into my personal and professional life, and that's when I really started to just lose control. I mean, I had already lost control, but that's when I started seeing it. That's when it started really cropping up in my life. And you know, I'll kind of fast forward a little bit, because it doesn't, I still can be a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, even, you know, years removed from alcohol. And that crops up in my life. And for me, that's really why I need to do a fourth and a fifth step at that time, when I'm noticing that I'm having these you know, incongruent identities. My behavior is not matching with the principles of the program. Like, these things are not coming together. It's not coherent, and I recognize that. But the problem for me is, again, it's not a fifth step problem. I don't mind telling you. My problem is getting to the fourth step and admitting it to myself. I think that's become even harder years removed from alcohol. You know, it's why am I still doing this? Why do I still have this problem? I don't want to write an inventory, because writing an inventory means I have to actually be honest with myself. You know, and I can't be honest with you in a fifth step if I barely want to acknowledge the fact that, hey, some of my defects are cropping up in a pretty bad way. recently I've been going through some kind of personal things that stemmed from trying to maintain this dual identity. You know, everything's fine at home, you know, marriage and kids are fine, everything's good, don't look over here, and then, you know, professional life, and kind of maintaining the distance between those two things without having anything kind of blend in or bleed over. And eventually it just gets exhausting. It's like, things are not fine, you know, and I have to admit that to myself, and I have to write something about it. And it's hard to admit that you have been playing this part. You know, you've been playing a role. Is everything's good in Jen's world? No problems here. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. Nothing to see. You know, it gets very tiring. And I think for me, writing it down and admitting that this long into not having a drink, when I don't do what I'm supposed to do, here I am again. And the scary thing for me is I don't want to take another drink. And I don't think that I will. I think if anything, my next step is I'm done. Like, I'm just going to end it. You know, and I'm not saying that that's going to happen, or, you know, don't call Adult Protective Services. But I'm just saying, like, at this point, drinking's not an option. So if I'm miserable, what's my option? I only have one other option. And I have kids. Like, that's not a good option for me. I think that it was important for me to recognize that the problem doesn't go away, it doesn't resolve after the first, fourth, and fifth step. I still have these things, and I still can have the dual identity, the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, doesn't apply just to our drinking life, our alcoholic and non-alcoholic life. I can play 1,000 different parts and 1,000 different roles. And if some of them are diametrically opposed, or if they're competing with each other in some way, I'm going to be crazy. But I don't want to admit that to myself, that, hey, I've been doing this for a while, and yet here I am. And so that can become a problem, you know, and that's when I need to let myself get some pain, I guess. I mean, I'm just a terrible, terrible person when it comes to learning things the easy way. I don't do that. I have to be in pain. Pain is my motivator, and it's unfortunate, but that's just who I am. You know, that's one of the things that I've learned to accept about myself, is that unfortunately, and luckily, my threshold for pain has decreased over time. You know, I'm not willing to put up with the amount of pain that I used to be willing to sit in. You know, I'm not in the deep end anymore. I'm kind of like more like I'll wade into the shallow end, and then, you know, that's too much. So I think that's it for now.
Awesome. Okay, we'll continue on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. We should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They'll be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
Yeah, so whenever it's just kind of funny because it also goes back to that double life and that mask that I, you know, feel that I'm so good at putting on. And whenever I moved here and decided that, you know, I was going to go through this, I met with my sponsor, and he's like, so, like, I know you've been sober for a little bit, you know, what are you looking to get out of this? He's like, you don't seem like anybody that's, you know, you don't seem like somebody that's holding anything back or, you know, that's holding on to anything. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, I want to kill myself and I'm going insane. But I'm like, yeah, no, nothing too crazy, you know. That's kind of how it was. So, you know, like most good people, I got up to this point, and in my brief, not brief, but in my dry spell of my sobriety, like not even going to AA, was the first time that I really started praying, which is kind of funny. I'm like, I don't do that God stuff, but you know, when the heat's on me, I'm gonna start praying now. You know, even though I'm not doing anything else. So at this point, I'm okay with doing that, you know, and I'm okay with doing everything else. So I get to writing this, and I do what most people do, is I sit on it for a little while, you know, which is also pretty miserable, honestly. So I remember it got to the point of... you know, I think it had been about 4 months since we had read over some of the stuff, and I had written down a few names and stuff like that. And I, you know, I think I might have even been the one to be like, let's just meet on this day, you know, and I'll have everything done then. And, you know, also in my previous, you know, mediocre inventory that I had done when I lived in Richmond, I didn't do a fear and sex inventory. I honestly had no idea what it was, you know? So, like, there was a huge experience I was missing out on there that I had no idea. So, you know, I made that date, and I stuck to it. And you know, of course, like any good alcoholic, I'm sitting there finishing everything up at 3 a.m, you know, like I just got to get this done. Like I was going crazy in my mind. And I think the day that I set that date was the last day that I thought that, you know, buying a gun sounded like a good idea. You know, kind of like Jen said, like if I'm not doing this stuff, like I start thinking about the last option. So yeah, I had already decided who was to hear my story at this point. I started telling this inventory to my sponsor, and you know, it got to the point where we're getting up to the last thing, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm shaking, you know, and I don't want to tell. You know, the thing is there's stuff that like nobody had ever known in my entire life, and it got to the point, you know, damn, he was so patient with me, which is really, really great, because it got to the point where we were driving around, and then he's like, you either killed somebody or it's some gay stuff. Yeah. And I was like, yes, no, I didn't kill anybody. It's definitely some gay stuff. 120%, teetotally, and absolutely nobody knows, you know? And I was living like a triple life, you know what I mean? I wanted to die because I was holding all of this stuff in, not like it was bad, you know what I mean? But I was holding it all in because I had all of these fears about what people would think about me, or what, you know, like fear of how like people were gonna view me, you know what I mean? And it was like so freeing. I'm like laughing afterwards. I'm like, this is amazing. This is the best feeling that I've ever felt in my entire life. And I believe we went from there and actually visited, like did a 12-step call to somebody that was in the hospital, you know? And this guy was like in his 20s and was like full on jaundiced, drinking himself to death. And, you know, we're like, you know, 12-stepping this guy. We never heard from him since, but I'm like, this is magic right here. You know, like I had a profound experience with this. It's like we can look the world and we can be alone at perfect peace. For the first time in my life, I was like, I'm okay. You know, like I don't feel consumed with all of this stuff that I've been stuffing down in me my entire life. You know, like all of these crazy things that I've been acting out and doing because, you know, I want to feel good, one, and I can't let anybody know about what I'm doing, you know? And my experience is obviously different than a lot of people's, but there's definitely some people in this room that can relate to some of that stuff. And for the first time in my life, it says right here, it says, we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. And that was the first time in my life that I felt like, you know, I'm in the right place. You know, this is the stuff that they've been talking about to me for the past 3 years. And, you know, I think that I'm going to be all right, and I'm going to do this. You know, that was my assurance there that everything was going to be okay. And, you know, the gun doesn't sound like a good idea anymore. At that second, it didn't sound like a good idea anymore. And that doesn't come up in my mind today anymore. I will say I'm going to kind of bounce in ahead a little bit, but not really. But, you know, because of a lot of the stuff that went down, you know, I'm like flooded with all these feelings that I've never felt before. And in that period of time, and, you know, after about a few hours, I'm like, well, damn, because now the jig is up. You know, I have some work to do, you know. And a lot of fears I had never felt had come up. You know what I mean? I don't know. This was a very profound experience for me. And there isn't anything that I've felt for me to be as freeing as that, you know, first time that I actually told all my life story to somebody. You know, kind of like Jen said, it's like, I gotta tell people about this. And I'm not perfect now by any means. I'm crazy all the time. But the thing is I'm consistently trying my best at doing these things here. And I seem to get a lot of relief, and I seem to be, you know, pretty happy most of the time. And that's really all I ever wanted in life, was to be happy, you know? Alcohol did that at first, and then it turned on me and just started doing everything to me. We got some stuff to do. I'm going to give Jen time. Sorry.
Thanks, boy.
Take all the time you want. there's only one kind of part of this that really pops out to me today in particular. And I kind of touched on it earlier. It says, once we have taken the step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. And I mentioned before that I thought that meant that if I forgot something or didn't add something, that I was going to get drunk. And so I spent so long just like racking my brain. I think what my personal belief is, what it means is, if I remember it and it's significant, or even if I don't think it's significant, but I remember it, if it comes in my brain, I should be writing it down and I should be talking about it with someone. Doesn't mean I'm going to sit there for 6 months and try to recreate, you know, the last couple years of my life so that I can remember every specific instance of me doing something insane, because first of all, we would have like an 8-volume novel. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it's not feasible. I need to get on with the steps and get some relief. So for me, withholding nothing means if I think about it, I'm putting it on paper. It doesn't mean sit there and rack my brain for years and then do step 5. You know, and it's funny because this is the first time I've ever kind of thought about it in this way, but when I was a kid, I used to pray before I went to bed, but it was just this really bizarre kind of prayer, like, dear God, please don't let anything bad happen to, and then this list of people, you know, and I would do it every night out of guilt, and then I kind of felt like, or out of fear, I would say, and then in my head it was like, if I forgot someone, if something happened to them, it is therefore my fault, because God can save them, but I can kill them, okay? So in my head, I've always had this like very bizarre fear of leaving something out, Because as a kid, and I don't know where I learned this from, because I was never taught that this is how I needed to pray or whatever, I just had this fear that I'm going to leave something out, and then the thing that I leave out, something bad's going to happen to that person, and then it's going to be my fault. So very similarly, I had this irrational fear that I'm going to leave something out of my fourth step, and then all of a sudden, without knowing why, I'm just going to drink and it's all going to be over and whatever, you know. But I don't have that much control. And it's funny to me to think that now, knowing the program, what a little alcoholic in training I was, you know, in my little toddler bed, like, please don't let anything happen to mommy and daddy. And then the next day, I forgot, like, my fourth cousin twice removed, they're gonna die, you know. And like, why I don't know why I had that fear, but it was always just this very and like, bedtime was stressful for me because of that. I dreaded going to bed because I'm like, now I'm gonna have to lay in bed and think for like 15 minutes of all the people that I know who I don't want to die, you know. It's just a crazy, crazy thing. And I think that that's kind of bled over into all of my life, this feeling of if I don't do it perfectly, if I don't have all my ducks in a row, the whole world's gonna explode and it's gonna be Jen's fault, you know. So I think that it's important for me to recognize, with respect to the fourth step and the fifth step, that withholding nothing just means, if you think about it and it's significant enough to remember it, write it down, but don't spend years of your life sitting on your fourth step and waiting to do your fifth step because of some vague feeling that maybe one day you'll remember the time you like pissed your pants in the back of the bar and someone got fired. I don't know, that didn't happen to me, just saying.
Did you read my inventory? Okay, we're going to keep going on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? And on page 76, if we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can He take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. Morgan.
All right. That page is falling out. Real quick, that was really funny, though, about the praying for people, because my mom used to have me do that when I was like 5. So that was nice. I think that I was trying to be like cute or something, so I kind of followed these directions, you know, taking it off of the bookshelf I didn't have, but it was kind of like this little shelf next to my bed. And, you know, this, you know, there was a lot here, you know. Kind of how I did it is I literally set a timer on my phone for 1 hour, and I did exactly what it says here. Reviewed for the first time, you know, I actually told all of this stuff to somebody. You know, all of the stuff that I thought that I was gonna, like, you know, I thought it didn't really matter, I was just gonna push it down deeper. And you know, really what I thought is I was gonna have a crappy little family and I was gonna be unfaithful. That's legitimately was my plan of action up until this point. You know, not be who I really was. Which I probably would have been drunk and dead by that point. But if, you know, if I didn't actually be willing to face and be rid of the things that had been blocking me from this power that I wasn't willing to believe existed for the longest time. So I did exactly this. I took the book down from the little thingy next to my bed and I read the first 5 steps, asking if I've omitted anything, you know. And I kind of sat there for a while thinking, and, you know, I was still a little bit giddy, you know, thinking like, oh my God, like, this is awesome. I feel freedom for the first time. And then it was like towards the end of that hour, it was like, okay, now you have some work to do. You know, I've got to kind of go out and, you know, I've got to talk to my family about some of these things, which brought up a lot of fear. So, you know, it was like I got all of this stuff it talked about in the last paragraph, you know, as my immediate thing. And then it was followed by, oh, crap, this is real now. You know, I'm done hiding everything. And I kind of need to figure out, I need to see where I'm supposed to be going from here. You know, I suck at figuring it out. So I'm not going to figure it out. I'm going to, you know, say a few prayers and see, you know, kind of hop along for the ride and see how things pan out. So I could answer with satisfaction. And I was, you know, like it was the first time that I had felt, you know, some sort of power that wasn't me, you know, and I am ready. I am ready for the first time. First time in my life, I'm actually ready. Yeah, I think that's it. But I will say this too, though, and I was talking to David on Sunday, and he kind of pointed out to me, and I hadn't read over these in a while, and I do love that it says, can he take them now, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We just ask for God to help us be willing, you know? And there's beauty in that. Just keep seeking. So, thanks.
Thanks, Morgan.
Yeah, I think Morgan just really hit on exactly what I wanted to pull out of this section in particular is the willingness. Because there are one particular defect that I did not want to give up. I have always been an incredibly anxious person, and I was convinced that my anxiety is what allowed me to excel in school, in academics, to, you know, achieve things. And my biggest fear was that if I gave up my fears and I let go of my anxiety, I wouldn't perform well because I wouldn't care anymore. Now, obviously, there's a difference between being anxious and not caring. But in my head, this anxiety, I was some modern marvel, like some new evolutionary, you know, I don't know, they should study me in biology class. I was some biological evolution that made people just excel, this anxiety. I really thought that my anxiety was this adaptation. Really, it's not. It's a malady, okay? Some anxiety is good, obviously, if there's a bear coming at me. If I'm just standing there like, all right, cool, like that's probably a problem. But the anxiety, the level of anxiety and the things that I worry about are not adaptive, I would venture to say. And if some of you heard my various anxieties, I think you might agree. And so, you know, I think for me, the fact that the book gave me this alternate path, like if you're not ready yet, just be willing. Because I wasn't. You know, I really felt like my whole world was going to crumble if I couldn't go over my list of fears in my head every day. But you know what was okay was saying, God, I really hope that someday I'll be able to let this go. Because I wanted to, but I was just scared to. I think, interestingly, and I'll leave it at this, the first time that I didn't wake up like full of fear and going through, you know, I had a list of different things that I would go through each day. Okay, am I dying? No. Was my kids okay? Yes. You know, going through these, and I felt like if I could go through each of these fears and check them off and figure out why they either were valid or not and what my plan of action was, life was okay. And I had to do that every morning. And the first time that I didn't feel like I needed to do that, I was that was like the biggest anxiety attack of my life, right? Because I'm like, what is going on? Like, I'm so fearful that I don't have these anxieties. There must be like things falling through the cracks. Like, I mean, the world's about to end, but I just don't know it. And I mean, definition of crazy, right? So certainly for me, anxiety has been a very consistent evil and corrosive thread throughout my life. But being able to pray for willingness was great. Like, that was for me, I think if I wasn't able to see that part of the book, I might not have gotten sober. I might have decided to go back out and drink, because to me, my anxiety was, at the time, was like a safety net. Like, I felt like I needed it. And the book says it's okay. If you think you still need it, you know, just ask to be willing to one day maybe don't need it, maybe not need it. So, thanks.
Awesome. All right, we are out of time. We're going to let Bill Wilson have the last word on page 76. When ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." We have then completed step 7. So we have no dues or fees, but here's the basket we put them in. The 7 tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7 tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight from you? In this room, here tonight. Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members.
Strong.
Also, we never announce our upcoming events until 30 days before the event, so I'm not announcing this right now. But I am letting you know that there are some attractive green flyers up here on this table, and if you could help us get the word out by taking some of them with you tonight, that would be super awesome. Newcomers, you are the reason we are here. Is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody?
Jerry Alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry. Hey, Jerry.
Welcome.
BJ Alcoholic.
Hey,
BJ,
welcome.
Brian Alcoholic.
Hey, Brian. Brian, welcome.
Welcome.
Jason Alcoholic.
Jason Alcoholic.
Welcome.
Jennifer Alcoholic.
Hey, Jennifer, welcome.
Welcome. Anybody else? There's literature available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank our panel one more time? That was great. I'd like to thank everyone who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Right?
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
That's correct.
Is everyone welcome at that?
Everybody is welcome to come to that. Please.
May I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Kendra, nice and loud.
I'm Kendra, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kendra. Hey, Kendra.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. We constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for a man who's still sick. The answer will come. If your own house is in order, obviously, but obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you on the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen. Oh, you think you got enough for the circle around the chairs?
Deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.